This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
This is Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia and right around the world. I'm your host, Louise Taffer. And joining me in the studio is Athos Syrianos. Athos, thank you for joining me.
Good evening, Louise. Good to be back once again.
It's great to have you back on the show. And there's plenty going on in the world of football.
There is. You and Nick Debano had a great discussion last night about a range of different things, but I believe you're right on top of the news once again.
I am. Thanks, Athos. Star Australian athletes will battle it out for the Don Award tonight at the 34th Sport Australia Hall of Fame induction. Matildas striker Sam Kerr has been nominated amongst cricketers and motorsport. And actually, you know what, Athos? The Socceroos won that back in 2006.
There you go. And is Sam a chance tonight? Surely it's a chance.
Well, basically, the Don Award is named after Sir Donald Bradman, and it is to honour a current Australian athlete or team who, by their achievements and example over the last 12 months, are considered to have had the capacity to inspire most of the nation.
I'd say Samantha has inspired all of us here. She ticks all those boxes. The others don't even need to rock up, I think. Just give her the award. And she's inspired potentially a whole generation of future Matildas as well. What I loved seeing, I think a few months ago, a few young players knocked on her door in a local suburb, and she went and had a kick with them, which I thought was just fantastic. A player of her calibre to do that is fantastic.
Yeah, it's really humbling, isn't it? And those kids were so happy.
Well, it's not only is it a dream come true, but they'll never forget that. They'll keep it for them for the rest of their lives, and I'm sure the next Australia jersey they buy, they won't be putting Cahill on the back, they'll be putting Samantha Kerr.
That's what a lot of them have been doing. And elsewhere, Matilda's defender Ellie Carpenter will return to Canberra United for 2018-19, and at only 18 years old, Carpenter is now heading into her fourth W League season. So that's another big plus for Canberra United.
Well, it's awesome when you're an 18-year-old. You're just an adult and you're a W League veteran. She's been doing it quite well for Canberra United in the W League. And they do have quite a hectic schedule, don't they, these Matildas and these female footballers, having most of them coming from the MLS to Matilda friendlies and now preparing for a World Cup. So it's where player management really has to be amplified and really taken very seriously.
Staying with the W League, Perth Glory have announced the signing of Katie Norton. The highly rated central defender joins Glory fresh from another impressive NWSL campaign with Chicago Red Stars, where she made 24 starts and won the club's Best Defender Award. Head coach Bobby Despotovsky believes that the 24-year-old will be a major asset for Glory this season. And finally, Wellington Phoenix have announced the signing of 23-year-old attacker Max Burgess from NPL club Sydney Olympic on a one-year contract. Burgess scored 7 goals in 23 appearances as his team secured top spot in the New South Wales NPL and went on to win the grand final. Athos.
Plenty of talent down at Sydney Olympic. They did the double with the premiership and the championship. They've got loads of talents in the NPL, and we've seen quite a few this season, especially go to the Mariners with your Jordan Murrays and similar type of players like that. So I think the more NPL players that are getting a look in at A-League level and can make that shift between a semi-professional environment and an A-League environment, the more the better, and I can't wait to see how players like that will turn up.
That's it, and of course, Max has previously played with Sydney FC.
So he's got that experience going for him, so it won't be such a shock when all of a sudden he gets into this A-League environment.
Exactly, and I hear head coach Mark Rudin has been aware of his talent for a while, and his interest was actually confirmed after Burgess played a match against Wellington Phoenix in pre-season.
Well, it's always good. There is that old theory which many subscribe to where the opposition's best play, you just go and recruit him if he plays well against you. I'm sure the Phoenix have been monitoring Sam for quite some time, so all things are looking quite positive for the Phoenix at the moment. I'm sure Mark Rudin will be given quite a bit of time to implement his strategy, and there's no doubt that Mark Rudin's appointment as head coach was more of a long-term investment. I don't think they're going to be out to win silverware and get immediate success.
Yeah, it's definitely a good project for Mark, and I certainly hope he does well this season, because that Wellington Phoenix squad just needs a real confidence boost and they need to get wins on the board.
Well, is a massive personality. Is a someone who I think can really get behind the players if things aren't going well. He's the figurehead of Wellington Phoenix. They probably haven't had that recently. They've sort of been the neglected team in the A-League, but now Mark Rudin's there. He's been in the A-League for quite some time as a player and as a pundit, so they're going to get a lot of attention this season, which is fantastic for them, because it almost feels like sometimes we forget about the Wellington Phoenix because they're over in New Zealand.
Exactly, I would agree with that. That is what is making headlines at the moment, but plenty to come over the next 2 hours. Athos, we have some special guests coming up.
That we do. We are going to hear very shortly from Jane Peters, a former Matilda the central midfielder, who's had a bit to say after the Matildas' two performances, in particular that one against England. She was quite vocal in being quite critical of Alan Stagic's coaching decisions on the field, perhaps suggesting that he's only putting the best players out on the park as opposed to playing place to position and building team chemistry, considering we are only 6 months away from the World Cup. So very interested to speak with her very shortly. Louise, you also caught up with assistant manager of the Socceroos, Ante Milicic, who has been in and around the system for quite some time. Is there anything you can preview before we get him on?
I did. He is currently the head coach of the under-20 young Socceroos, and they're off in Indonesia, and they are going to look to qualify for the FIFA under-20 World Cup in Poland next year. So it was great to chat to him and about how they're going at the moment. We're a week out from those qualifiers. So great stuff, and that will be coming up in the next hour after 6:30, Athos.
Of course, and sticking with our theme of national team guests tonight, you spoke with James Delianov as well from the Young Socceroos.
Yes, he is the Young Socceroos goalkeeper. He also applies his trade at Melbourne City and has been getting a lot of very good experience under the watchful eye of City's newest recruit, Mark Birigidi.
Yes, I'm sure he's going to have a lot to teach James. It's a national team-filled episode today. We are looking at all tiers of Australia at a national level, which is good to see. That the tournament over in Indonesia as well, which the Young Socceroos are qualifying for, it is pivotal given that we've already had two youth sides qualify for World Cups at their respective levels, and another one at the tick-off would be quite extraordinary.
Yeah, well, we've had one qualifier at the moment. We've had the Joeys. The Junior Matildas have gone to the second round of qualifiers, so they are not confirmed yet. However, this is the last stage for the Young Socceroos. So if they get past the group stage and then make the semis, then they'll be through. So very exciting times ahead for the Young Socceroos and Ante Milicic as they look to qualify for the under-20 FIFA World Cup. Athos, we're going to take a quick break because coming up is Joanne Peters. You're listening to Evenings on FNR.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
This is Evenings on FNR, and you're with Louise Taffer and Athos Syrianos as we talk all things the Australian national team tonight. We've got the Matildas, the Socceroos, and even the Young Socceroos. But right now, we are going to switch our focus to the women's national team, and joining us now is former Matilda Joanne Peters. Joanne, thank you for coming on the show.
You're very welcome, Lou. Thanks for having me. And Athos, great to be here, guys. Mm-hmm.
There's so much to discuss from the Matildas' two matches against France and England, a loss and a lucky draw. How do you assess both games, and where do you think we're at?
Well, it's a good question, because we can assess ourselves where we're at, because we just played the number 3 and 4 in the world. So I keep getting mixed up. It's England at 3, France at 4. But the thing is, they're where our semi-final place is, stands between us and them, or even a final in a World Cup. So 8 months out from a World Cup, it's a perfect opportunity to assess where we're at realistically. Now, we had our stars out, but still it was an opportunity to test ourselves tactically in a game situation against the best team in the world. Unfortunately, we fell quite short, and it's revealed a lot of issues that we've got, but we hopefully 8 months out from the World Cup, we can rectify them and still get to a semi-final or World Cup final. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Joe, it's Athos here, and it certainly would be awesome. And playing against the world's best was a good test. Did you see any a noticeable improvement between the France game, where the Matildas were quite humbled, to the England game, where the Matildas were able to get themselves back in it?
It's a great question, Athos, because I don't think we did. And that was a concern. The concern from the France game, Mackenzie Arnold had an interview, bless her, you know, and it was a great experience for her to be in the sticks in the two top games, even though she probably would have been disappointed with letting a couple of goals in. But anyway, what she said was that we, as a nation, on that night, we couldn't solve the problem. And we had another look at the video to actually assess where we could improve, and that next time we'll be ready. The thing is about football, what is it? It's about actually solving problems in the game. And we weren't able to do that. So then there was an opportunity to do that in the English game, to reset and go, okay, these are the problems we've got. What if we play against, what if a front three plays against us? What if they play central, their three? Because that's what they did. That's what France did. They're the same pockets that the English exposed as well. So there were similarities across both games that I felt that we actually couldn't adapt to. And that is a concern for me on a tactical level and on a coaching level.
And Joey, the Matildas head coach, Alan Stajic, tweaked the formation because we didn't have some of our main faces in the team. We saw Catley moving into a position that she wouldn't normally play. We saw Caitlin Ford moving into a position she wouldn't normally play. Did you find that there was a little bit of disharmony in defence?
Look, he didn't. I'm not sure what you mean by tweak the formation, because he actually played the same way. There was a couple of changes he made, and usually our six drops in. So Emily Van Egmond, when she's playing, is beautiful at dropping in between the centre-backs to pick up the ball. And KK did that in the France game, and actually they all tried to rotate in the France game. All the midfielders tried to go deep. In the second game, what I saw tactically change was that they didn't want the six to drop deep very often. They wanted more of the midfielders to be ahead of the ball, try and break that first line of defence, if that all makes sense.
Does that make sense?
You guys with me?
Yep.
So with that tactic, that was the only tactical change. In terms of moving personnel, that's also a big issue. So we've got Steph Catley now. He's saying that Steph Catley can play centre-back, she can play left-back, and we've got Caitlin Ford can play either backs, wings, and they're her position. So he's actually wanting girls to play two positions so that he can cover for any issues such as injury, which is another concern, how many injuries we've got. So anyway, he's trying to cover and make the squad as versatile and as deep as possible. But unfortunately, it doesn't matter. Well, it does matter who you've got in those positions, because you need to build chemistry with the players around you. I played with Heather Garriock for 10 years. We both played on the left. I played in left midfield. She played left back. We interchanged. That's the chemistry I'm talking about. And these players need to get that.
You made some comments after the game on SBS saying that Stadge wants his best players out on the pitch and doesn't really care where they go. Can you just touch on this a little bit more? And again, is it more having team chemistry or your best players starting?
Well, you do both, because you want your best players out in the field, right? You want your best players out in the field, but that means you actually have to then adapt how you want to play the game. So my problem is you're putting different players out there expecting different chemistry, or expect to make that chemistry with the players next to you, whilst also playing exactly the same way that we play. It's not actually giving freedom for the players. Is that on the right track?
Yeah, that's well on the right track. And Joe, just quickly, the Matildas, a lot of the players came out and said that it's been quite a difficult schedule for them, having many of them come from the MLS. But is this more an issue of tactics as opposed to maybe fatigue?
It's both, mate. And again, there's questions now, if we really want to get deep into it, there's questions now about our four-year cycle. So you have a four-year cycle that you should plan towards. So Sajic's had a bit over he's had 5 years since coming on board for the last Asian Cup. So you would actually be able to plan out your four-year cycle. So all the things that they've had, the Asian Cup, Tournament of Nations, Algarve Cup, Westfield W League, overseas commitments, still with a few friendlies in there as well. Is there anything I've missed?
No, I think you've covered it all.
So all with all that, he knew that that was happening. And now when there's a chance to play the top three and four in the world, he's resting players. Why? That doesn't add up to me. You would have in your four-year schedule, this is when I want players to peak. And that's basic conditioning. So I'm actually confused as to why we had those players out in the first place resting now. Are the French resting? Are the English resting? No, they're just tweaking. They're starting to tweak now. We're 8 months out from a World Cup. You want to be buzzing.
And on the back of, you know, Sam Kerr, Lydia Williams, Alana Kennedy, Emily Van Egmond and Katrina Gorry, as you touch on, who are all rested, it gave opportunity...
Okay, Tom, I can't... Sorry, I've just... Yeah, keep going.
It gave opportunity for some of the young players to step in, and in the match against England, we saw more than, I think it was 3 2000s start, Amy Sayer, Princess Abini and Ellie Carpenter, the former two making their starting debuts for the Matildas. How do you view the inclusion of the young faces?
Look, I want to make two points here. The first point is there is absolutely no question of the talent that is out there on the field, and actually they could be playing for us at the World Cup, okay? That's how good these kids are. But my next point is from an off-the-pitch perspective, which this is what I'm passionate about, because it's more than just about sports people. It's about the person. And that's why I'm involved in kids, coaching kids and grassroots in sport now, because we don't understand, and I've lived through it, and I know, and I've seen plenty of others go through it, including right now with the Matildas, that it's a grueling professional sport, okay? Being a sportswoman, we do not get the money that the men do. So Daniel Arzani is 18, and he deserves to be out there. He's a few years older than 15, because when we're talking 15, we're talking still kids, right? We're talking kids. There's a big difference between a 15-year-old and an 18-year-old in life, or is there not? Like, just normal teenagers. I've got a lot of them at home. Okay, so this starts getting serious about kids' welfare. And tell me to calm down, guys, if I need to. But we're talking about childhood prodigy here. I've done a lot of research in kids' development around the world. The Tiger Woodses, the Serena Williams sisters, they did not have a childhood. And unfortunately, I see the same thing with Mary Fowler. She's out there on the field. She's probably absolutely loving it, and I hope she absolutely is loving every second of it. But I'm not sure, as adults, we are doing the right thing by a 15-year-old, because there is no doubt she's going to be the best player in the world following Sam Kerr. But are we going to protect her so that she doesn't end up like Sam Kerr in a way now, who's getting injured, and all our other stars, like Alana Kennedy having to have ankle operations on her break, Steph Catley having to play on one leg? These are the real issues that are coming up now in women's sport, and that's why I want to raise them. And I want the sport to get better, because we need to look after girls as girls first rather than footballers first. So there's a lot in that, guys. I don't know if you want to go further.
No, it's certainly a valid point, and it's remarkable that at 15 she's competing at the highest level possible, and it's easy for people externally to say that she's going to have an incredible 20-year career, but we can obviously see the significant toll it has on the players out there. So what would you suggest is the best way to integrate Mary into that fold at that high level? Should we wait
It will never happen though, mate, because the ideal would be that she just plays games. Take her over to France and let her... Or maybe even not take her over to France. Let her play in the friendlies. No, take her to France. If we think she's good enough to play in the World Cup, take her to France, let her play for the Matildas, let her play for the W League. But I'm telling you, it's all the training that goes with it. It's all the pressure that we know nothing about, that someone like Sam Kerr knows a bit about. These girls now are entering unknown territory. They've got to play for club. They've got to play for two clubs and country. And they've got a hell of a schedule on their shoulders. So if Mary Fowler can handle that, then, yeah, I'm hoping she comes through unscathed these years. Because the other thing about being 15, that's when your body is growing the most, isn't it?
Yeah, that's
so you want to hound a growing body. That's what we don't understand now in professional sport, or what we're doing now. This is why I'm concerned about this culture, and I've been saying it for a long time. Leave the kids alone. We know how good they are. It's not the question. But do we realise what they're going to have to go through? And I don't want to see them go through operation after operation like these other girls are. And I want to see them succeed, because the other thing now, we've got a team of golden generation, we're calling. And after those two performances against France and England, are we going to be able to resurrect and beat them in time to secure a semi-final berth? Because that's what we're aiming for. And that's what we should at least get with this generation. We showed great signs of moving and beating the best in the world. We didn't come up against European teams before. I'd like to see us play Germany next. And then we can say that we might be able to get a semi-final. But I'm real concerned at the moment with all these injuries and all these issues coming out.
Joey, do you think Alan Stajic will approach the games against Chile in the same way he did against France and England?
Well, I hope not. After maybe a few of us have had a conversation and put out there that we need to be more versatile, because I'm telling you, Chile, it would be great to have them out here, another South American up-and-coming nation. You know, it's fantastic, but the reality is, and it's also important that the Matildas have home games. So I don't care who you play. Matildas need to have home games. It's fantastic that we've got these games coming up. I'm going to be, hopefully calling the games again on SBS. Just loving seeing the Matildas play. And then there's no doubt they'll be successful with this style of play, with probably some of their stars back. There's no doubt that they'll have a great night out against Chile. But my thing is, are we going to be tested enough to then him actually have to say we need to vary our playing style? We can't always have the six drop in. We might need to tweak. Well, again, I don't think we don't have that potential, do we, to move to a back three? It took Ange how long to move from a back four to a back three?
Yeah, it was a real evolution.
The French did it. The French did it overnight. This French woman did. So why aren't we adapting so flexible as well?
So do you think we should move to a back three?
We should be able to. If he wants to put the players out that he wants to put out, put them in a better formation. Put Ellie Carpenter as a wing back, not as a full back where she's got too many defensive opportunities, responsibilities.
Yeah.
Get her further up the park. If you have a back three behind her, rather than at the moment both of our full backs are bombing on, so we've only got two left. If she bombs on and Caitlin Ford, we want to bomb on. But we can't. We can't. So you might need to put another one in there. And then you can maybe even sit more of your best players on the pitch, that whoever you want to put out there. But that's my thing. You work with the players you've got. He had a completely different team and played the exact same way, didn't he?
Yeah.
It gets really interesting, all these tactical things. And that's what I'm loving about women's football. It's evolving. We're getting into the tactics, you know, and that's our strength as women's footballers, because we don't have the testosterone. We actually have to be tactically more now. And you can say technically as well, we're improving, but they go together. And we have to be intelligent. And this is what we're seeing in the next level of European female coaches coming through. Diacra, if you pronounce it right, she was unbelievable. Next level.
Yeah, and Joey, you raised some very good points. We'll leave it there tonight, but thank you so much for coming on the show.
You're very welcome, guys. Thanks for listening in. Let's continue the discussion on Twitter or something.
We will. We'll look forward to having you on the program again soon.
Thanks so much, guys.
The program again soon.
Thanks so much, guys. Bye for now.
That's former Matilda Joanne Peters coming on the show to discuss some of the issues coming from the Matildas' two matches against France and England. And Athos, she highlights some good points.
Very passionate about the Matildas and make some valid points too, especially in relation to the tactics. You got to be adaptable to all situations. And with Stage, you can sort of understand that he wants players to be ready for different situations, but ultimately you have to play the players best suited for that position. And if there's no one available, then I think that's probably a problem with on the development side of things.
Yeah, that's it. And even some of the points you raised about Mary Fowler and how we don't understand, you know, that it's a grueling sport and, you know, basically it's stripping her of her childhood.
Well, we only see Mary Fowler for 2 hours every so often, right? There's so much behind the scenes that we don't see. And it's easy for people to say that she's going to have a fantastic career until she's 35 and be the best women's player ever. But it will take a significant toll on her. And as Joe said, it just about deprives her of a childhood as well. So there is, of course, that balance. But at the same time, if she's ready to go on the plane to the World Cup at 15, then we should be pushing her and sending her there.
Well, Athos, we are going to take a quick break, but coming up is more Australian national team discussion. We'll be looking at the Young Socceroos. This is Evenings on FNR.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR. Football Nation Radio.
This is Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio. You're with Louise Taffer and Athos Syrianos. And you can join in the discussion at any point throughout the next hour by giving us a call on 03 99 44 99 99, or you can tweet to us at FNR underscore radio. Right now, we are going to switch our focus to the Young Socceroos. And I caught up with the Young Socceroos head coach, Ante Milicic. Ante, thank you so much for joining me. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. No dramas.
Ante, you're in a very unique position, taking charge of the Young Socceroos. How exciting is it for you to not only be coaching the next generation of players coming through, but also drawing on your own experience and potentially getting another shot at attending the Youth World Cup after you did so back in 2009 and 2011?
Yeah, and also played in it in 93, so that was a good experience. The 91 and 93 teams both made the semi-finals back in the day, so it is a special tournament, and I was fortunate enough to go to two World Youth Cups with Jan Verschlein in 09 in Egypt and 2011 in Colombia. So it's a special tournament, and you've seen you know, a lot of world-class players emerge and have great careers that have participated in this tournament. So it's a fantastic experience. But you know, more importantly, I'm looking forward to working with this group in a short space of time. And you know, hopefully we can put some good performances in Indonesia.
And Ante, before we talk about the team that you've assembled, how have you also developed further in terms of coaching, given you've just been to the FIFA World Cup in Russia?
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, like when you work under different coaches, you know, you form your own philosophy, and, you know, I've travelled a lot, seen a lot of things, particularly in Asia as well. So I know the tournament formats quite well and the type of oppositions that we're coming up against. So, you know, I've been fortunate enough to gain a lot of experience through my travels and through the tournaments that I've attended. And, you know, you work on yourself every day. You want to get better. You, and football's always evolving. So I'm quite pleased and blessed with the education that I've had so far.
And Ante, your involvement with the national teams is obviously very strong. Does it make it almost like seamless for the players to now come through the ranks?
Yeah, look, I think so. And, you know, there's a definite pathway there as well. And, you know, now as, also with the new coaching staff that's come in with the Socceroos, you know, we're constantly in contact and there's a lot of progress and you see the opportunities that's given to the young players. So, you know, I think it's a good opportunity now for the players to show themselves, and there's a lot more opportunities coming both, you know, hopefully domestically, but also internationally as well for these young players. And you know, just looking at the squads now that we're assembling, you know, there's a good mix between, you know, local and overseas based players.
And in terms of the scouting, as you've touched on, there are some new faces. Can you tell me a little bit about the internationals that you've selected?
Yeah, look, that was a main priority of mine. Now, obviously, being based overseas, you know, when working with the Socceroos and also, you know, with the Olleroos previously and now the Young Socceroos, I'm constantly, you know, trying to keep tabs on these overseas-based players. And, you know, and we've got a lot more out there that maybe people aren't aware of. But, you know, we've managed to get a few into this camp. At the same time, we've managed to miss out on a few as well. But, you know, I think this is another opportunity for these young ones to come in and to be part of it because, you know, playing in Asia, and it's a different experience. It's a different type of football. It's a different culture. And at the same time, you know, you can see that the overseas-based players that we have brought in, they just love coming back and, you know, catching up with old teammates, so to speak, or old friends that they haven't seen for a while. But we've been fortunate enough also to get players, for example, like Connor Zanidis, who, you know, hasn't spent too much time in the setup, but you know, he's a young boy that's gone over and has been in England for a while, so it's a good chance for us to have a look at him as well and see how he is developing and where he's at. And you know, Sebastian Pasquale and probably Christian Theo Harris are a lot well known, you could say, and you've got John Ardile as well. So you know, we've managed to pick up a few boys from overseas, and Ben Falami and Dylan Ryan from Ipswich and Willem Tvei, they're another two that have come in, and we're fortunate enough to get them in the previous window, so we got to see them a lot earlier. But like I said, excited to bring in a few boys from overseas again, just to see them, you know, interact with the other group.
And Ante, was it quite difficult for you to get a release on some of these overseas players?
It continues to be so, yeah. And that, look, that's the biggest challenge, you know. Obviously, you know, Dennis Jeanroux's not here, and same with Arzani, and there's the young boy, and Donny Martis as well. So there's three that, you know, we've missed out on from overseas, and Ashley Maynard-Brewer was another one for another reason. But, you know, you've got to keep in contact with the clubs. You've got to build relationships. You've got to be on the phone with the players constantly and doing visits. And it's difficult to do that from Australia, to do it continuously. But, you know, we try to build relationships, you know, as I mentioned, and just try to, you know, make people aware of the importance of not only the players coming and represent their country, but also, you know, what it can do for their futures. And it's only a short space of time. So, again, we understand when it falls outside of FIFA window that it's increasingly difficult, but at the same time, you know, we like to stress the importance of getting a release for those players because, you know, for us, you know, doing well at an Asian Cup and ultimately qualifying for World Cup is great exposure for our boys. And we probably don't get enough international football compared to the other teams in Asia that would like.
And touching on Asia, it is a different type of beast, as we know. And looking at the competition, you're in Group C with Korea, Republic, Vietnam and Jordan, three very different opponents.
Yeah, they are very, very different opponents and very difficult opponents, and you respect all the teams in Asia. And, you know, at the end, though, we have to prepare as best as possible. As you mentioned, they're three different playing styles, but ultimately we were putting a lot of our focus and energy into the first game, into Korea, and, you know, hoping to get a positive result and then build some momentum from there.
What do we know about Korea Republic at the moment, Ante?
Well, look, at the moment, well, we've watched as many games as possible. You know, they've had a very good preparation. They've, you know, over the last 12 months, they've been involved in a lot of camps and tours, you know, both domestically and overseas. So we're waiting for the squad list to be released in the next day or so. But we know it's a very difficult side to play against physically. They're quite well. They've got a lot of good individuals, particularly in that front third. But you know, at the same time, we must realise that the focus is on us, and we'll obviously analyse the opposition, and you know, the players will be aware of the, you know, the strengths and the weaknesses. But as I mentioned, we need to develop our own playing style and work on that, and you know, approach the game with confidence.
And in terms of our own playing style, I feel like preparation is key for these tournaments. Do you feel like you've had enough time to get the boys settled and out of their club systems and into the national team way of playing?
to be perfectly honest, probably not. But you know, they're the challenges. It is what it is. You know, with the preparation that we've had and the camps and the system, we've still been able to bring players that have been training with you know, A-League clubs as well, and we brought in boys from overseas. The main issue that we do have, and it's happened for a while now, is just, you know, getting enough time to spend with the players so they understand each other, so they build relationships, not only, you know, on the field but off the field as well. And there's a lot of parts of the game that we need to work on, and obviously when you have a lot more time, preparation and games as well is the best indicator. And then when you you know, throw in the different condition that the players come in from, different you know, playing groups, it becomes a challenge. And you need to understand, you know, in a short space of time, these players all play differently at their clubs with different formations and systems and principles. So to bring them in a short space of time, it is a challenge, but it's one that we're ready for. And you know, we'll do our best to be prepared. You know, both, you know, technically, tactically and physically as possible.
Ante, in an ideal world, what would an ideal preparation time and kind of schedule look like for you?
Oh, look, to be honest, in an ideal world, I'm going back a while, but when I played with the young Socceroos, we constantly had overseas camps and tours, and we need to use the FIFA windows at least and have more international exposure, because these are the different conditions that they're coming up. You know, already when we came here to Singapore to acclimatise the first few days, the players aren't used to this type of grass, to this humidity, to this heat. Then we'll have the challenges, of course, with the refereeing standards as well, the 2 days breaks in between games. So there's a lot of things to get used to. So that's why, you know, you need to work on your own playing system so that's you know, confident, and that's instilled in the group, because you have challenges, as you touched on earlier, to play these different types of systems. It's completely different, and when the players don't have enough experience playing international football at once, you know, it's a lot of information for them to take in, because you must understand that they're still young boys, but at the same time, they're at a critical stage of their career now. They're close enough to senior football, but this is actually the biggest jump for them. So that's why we would love to have more preparation, but you know, as I said, we just work with what we've been given.
And Ante, I know that there's obviously a lot going on, not only with FFA, but also with the Congress. However, we also are in search of even a new technical director. Has that absence kind of impacted you at all?
No, that hasn't impacted me at all. Like I said, I've just, you know, really focused just on the group, you know, getting a squad together and working on this preparation that we have. I mean, those things at the moment, if we look at our squad, you know, and our staff, that's out of our control, and we know that will be sorted out. Obviously, as you mentioned, it's a big issue, but that's something for down the track, because our main focus is we really need to concentrate on the job on hand, and you know, our first game is in 8 days' time, so we really need to make sure that we're prepared as possible for that.
And I believe that you also have a couple of friendlies scheduled before next week.
Yeah, correct. So today, you know, obviously with the Australian links in Johor with Alistair Edwards, we've organised a game across the border. So we're going to play Johor today in a friendly game. And then next Monday we have a game against the Singapore under-21s team, but possibly they'll be putting a few senior players in that squad as well. So that gives us an opportunity of two games, I should say, to get, you know, not only an understanding, but also match minutes in these conditions. And that's what's important for us. So hopefully by the time we get to Indonesia, we adjust to these conditions, because we know what they're like. And we do have a 4 o'clock kickoff there as well against Vietnam. And we all know, you know, that's completely different and something that our players haven't experienced for a while anyway. So, you know, these two games are very important for us.
And Ante, I know your winning mentality. You're going into the tournament not only to qualify for the under-20 FIFA World Cup, but perhaps win the under-19 AFC Championship?
Look, you know, you always go to win. You want to win every game, and even today, starting with friendlies, you want to win. It's important. Yes, the focus is on the first game to get a positive result. We'd love to qualify for this World Cup, and yeah, you'd love to win the Asian Cup. It hasn't been done yet in these younger age groups, but our first aim is to get a good result against Korea. But you know, the main reason for qualifying is yes, to go to a World Cup in Europe would be fantastic for this group of players, because again, it presents opportunities for the players. But what they need more than anything is just more games. They need more games, and to go to a World Cup will give you games against European, South American, African opponents, and that's what they need. They need to come against different playing styles, because I've seen it with the Socceroos over the last four and a half years, the difference that you get, and you just become a better footballer. And I think that our young footballers, that's an invaluable experience. So, you know, we'll do our best, you know, to get positive results. That would be the ultimate goal. But again, we have to understand the reasons why it would be important for us.
That's exactly right. And in terms of all the things you've just mentioned, that's how the players develop.
Yeah, of course they do, because I think when you are, either if you're a local-based player or an overseas-based player at the moment, you're playing the one way against, you know, at times similar oppositions, particularly in Australia. A lot of the football that they're getting, they're playing against similar playing styles and similar principles. So they really get challenged when they come overseas, and I saw it with my work with the Olyroos as well. So again, coming up against these kind of teams, you know, you're asked to come up with different solutions, different decision making, and you know, for young players, they definitely learn a lot of lessons. And at the same time, being away from home, you know, being mentally strong. I keep saying to the players, you know, teams that win the World Cup, the tournament goes for 30 days. You know, they're in camp 2 weeks before that. Can you maintain those high standards for 40 days?
Yeah.
You know, can you keep doing that and being professional? And that's what they give these boys. You know, it's getting out of their comfort zone and hopefully looking to achieve things, you know, not only individually but also collectively.
And Ante, we recently saw the Joeys qualify for the under-17 FIFA World Cup next year in Peru. Any thoughts and comments on that?
Yeah, fantastic. And you know, first and foremost, Trevor Morgan really deserves that, because the work that he's put in over decades in Australian football, you know, particularly in the youth part of the game, is exceptional. And I'm really glad for those boys, because, you know, that first game, you know, I think they saw the level, you know, and that's what it's about, seeing how good you are against players your age from different countries. And you know, they responded well, and you need a little bit of luck, and they got that in that second and third game. You know, the opposition had a player sent off, but that's not easy to play against as well, and they won that second and third game. They won it convincingly, and at the same time, in that must-win game against Indonesia, they came back from a goal down, you know. And there was a lot of people cheering for the opposition as well at Bukit Jalil, a lot of Indonesian fans. So again, playing in those big stadiums with that crowd and that adversity that they had to overcome, it's great. And as you mentioned, going to Peru, again, they've got at the moment at least three games of international football, hopefully more with preparation and if they go further. So it's a fantastic achievement, and full credit to Trevor, because he's done a fantastic job with that group in a short space of time.
Well, Ante, thank you so much for joining me, and I wish you all the very best for the upcoming AFC Under-19 Championship qualifiers, and certainly hope that you and the team do well.
Thanks very much, Louise, and we appreciate your support.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, and that was the young Socceroos head coach Ante Milicic chatting to me a little bit earlier ahead of their opening game against Korea Republic next week at the AFC Under-19 Championship. They will be looking to qualify for the Under-20 FIFA World Cup next year in Poland. I also managed to catch up with the young Socceroos goalkeeper, James Delianov. James, thank you so much for joining me. Everyone's arrived in camp. How does it feel to be back with the youth national team?
Good. It's been great. The competition level here has been high. You know, everyone's ready and everyone's competing for their spots.
And what's the vibe like at the moment, especially given there are a few new faces?
Look, all of us are very excited. We've all been working hard. And everyone's just made each other feel welcome because we've all got the same goal in the end, and it's to qualify for a World Cup.
And James, you've done that in the past with the under-17 Joeys. Just a word on the current Joeys squad qualifying for the World Cup in Peru next year.
Yeah, look, that's fantastic. And that's for them boys, you know. It's a massive learning curve for them. Hopefully it can become religious that every Joeys can qualify for their World Cup. So I'm very happy for them.
And James, like obviously you've been to the under-17 FIFA World Cup in Chile. How can you draw on your experience then and use that moving forward heading into these World Cup qualifiers with the young Socceroos?
Look, I think at the end of the day, you know, it's your level is just increasing in terms of your age group and stuff like that. But I think if you just look at it as just another football match, you know, it's obviously an honour and stuff like that. But I think you just got to continue to just be focused and work hard. So, yeah.
We're just a week out until the opening match against Korea Republic. From your perspective, you're one of the only players on the pitch that can see the whole game. How important for you is it to organise and communicate the players in front of you?
Look, it's very important. You know, we've been going through all of our set pieces, and for me and all the other goalkeepers, we've got to know everyone's role. So we play a massive role, so all of us are switched on and focused so we can do the best we can to qualify for this World Cup.
And you're just a week away, but before the opening match, you have a few friendlies?
Yeah, that's right. So today, this afternoon, we play Joa, and then we play the Singapore under-21 national team in a couple of days after that. So we're looking forward to that, and it'll be a good hit out.
And some of the boys you already know from Melbourne City, does that make it any easier?
Yeah, for sure. But I feel like the group's already has that family vibe. You know, we've played with a couple of boys before. All of us know each other's faces. It's like catching up with family every few months or so. So yeah, it does make it easier. But I feel like all the boys are pretty comfortable being in this environment as it stands.
You're obviously at Melbourne City and you've been there since you left the AIS. What's it like to work with City's new recruit, Mark Birigidi?
Yeah, he's a top guy. I've already learnt so much off him. You know, all the goalkeepers that I've worked with there have really helped me out. But Mark's a really good guy. I've learnt a lot off him, and same with Eugene as well. So, yeah, he's a good guy.
What in particular have you learnt, and what area of your own game have you strengthened?
Look, a lot of things in general. It's more of just a discussion. Things like maybe changing your set position, trying to find things that work for you. But for me, in general, the things that I've improved on is just my general play, a bit more calm on the ball, and which comes with experience. Obviously, there's a lot more to improve on, but as time goes on, it will come.
And James, we see quite a lot of different styles with goalkeepers these days. You've got your Matty Ryans, who are more of a sweeper. Do you kind of take that approach as well?
Yeah, of course. I feel like if you can fill out your whole package, gives you the best chance to, you know, to get a starting spot somewhere, anywhere in the world, even now with the 20. So I think ideally us young goalkeepers, we need to fill that package as much as we can, whether it's to be a shot stopper, to be a sweeper keeper. So yeah, of course, I think everyone's on that same boat.
And we know how it is tough for goalkeepers to get a chance, because there is only one of you on the pitch, and positions are few and far in between.
I feel like you just got to be patient and continue working hard.
One other thing that isn't really uncommon for matches in the AFC Championship is to go into penalties. Do you work on that much in training?
Yeah, I love penalties. I feel like it's a great moment for the goalkeeper to shine. So yeah, and it's a good feeling saving them. It's like scoring a goal for an outfield player. So yeah, we do work on them.
I don't know if there are any Korean, Vietnamese or Jordan people listening. I won't tell them your secrets, but how do you kind of take on a penalty shootout? Do you just look at which way the striker...
There's plenty of things. We study like every other team does. We work out who they take, which side they go, how often they go. And so there's plenty of things that come into play. But I feel like it's just instinct on the day.
And James, preparation is key with these qualifiers and qualifying for a Youth World Cup. Do you feel like you've had a sufficient amount of preparation leading into the AFC Under-19 Championship?
Of course. Everyone's all ready. Everyone's got the right mentality. I think everyone's very confident going into these qualifiers.
And how was it to work under Ante Milicic?
Yeah, he's great. He's, changed the vibe in camp. He says there's no rules, you just got to have standards, which, everyone's latched onto, and it's been great. I really like working under him.
And, James, is there much to adapt to from club life to the national team?
To be honest, it's pretty similar. They're both pretty professional environments. So not really. It's the same. Even if when you travel with the first team with Melbourne City, it's basically the same. You've got your breakfast, your lunch, you got to weigh in, etc. So it's all pretty similar, to be fair.
Before I let you go, I know with the Joeys, one aspect wasn't only just qualifying for the World Cup, but it was also to win the AFC Championship. Is that the same goal for the young Socceroos?
Yeah, of course, 100%. And yeah, that's a given. Every tournament we enter, we're always going to want to win. So yeah, 100%, that's a given.
Well, James, thank you so much for joining me. It's been a pleasure to chat to you, and I certainly wish you all the very best for the upcoming qualifiers.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
That's Melbourne City's goalkeeper, James Delianov, and he's also the goalkeeper for the young Socceroos who are looking to qualify for the under-20 FIFA World Cup next year. Athos, what a show we've had.
Excellent work, Lawyers. Yes, it's been a great show talking all things national level. It's been a great Australian edition tonight. Next on Evenings on FNR, we're going to look back at some of the best editions of the Pioneers, and we're going to start with Andy Pascalides, as both Georges are absent today. So from myself and Louise Taffer, it's goodbye for now.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.